The Legacy, Chapter 12, The Truth Be Known.
Blood,
Catterby muttered grimly, holding a torch and bending low over the line of droplets in the corridor near the entryway of a small chamber.
Could be from the goblin fight,
Bruner said hopefully, but Catterby shook her head.
Still wet,
she replied.
The blood from the goblin fight be long dried be now.
Then from the crawlers we seen,
Bruner reasoned.
Tearing apart the goblin bodies.
Still, Catterby was not convinced. Stooping low, torch held far in front of her, she went through the short doorway of the side chamber. Wulfgar clambered in behind and pushed past her as soon as the passageway widened again, coming up defensively in front of the young woman. The barbarian's action did not sit well with Catterby. Perhaps, from Wulfgar's point of view, he was merely following a prudent course, getting his battle-ready body in front of one encumbered with a torch and whose eyes were on the floor. But Catterby doubted that possibility, felt that Wulfgar had come in so urgently because she had been in the lead, because of his need to protect her and stand between her and any possible danger. Proud and able, Catterby was more insulted than flattered, and worried. For if Wulfgar was so fearful of her safety, then he might well make a tactical mistake. The companions had survived many dangers together because each had found a niche in the band, because each had played a role complementary to the abilities of the other. Catterby understood clearly that a disruption of that pattern could be deadly. She pushed back ahead of Wulfgar, batting aside his arm when he held it out to block her progress. He glared at her, and she promptly returned the unyielding stare.
"What do you got in there?"
came Bruner's call, deflecting the imminent showdown. Catterby looked back to see the dark form of her father crouched in the low doorway, Cobble and Point, who held the second torch, out in the corridor behind him.
"Empty,"
Wulfgar answered firmly, and turned to go. Catterby kept on crouching and looking about, though, as much to prove the barbarian wrong as in an honest search for clues.
"Not empty,"
she corrected a moment later, and her superior tone turned Wulfgar back around and Lord Bruner into the chamber. They flanked Catterby, who bent low over a tiny object on the floor, a crossbow quarrel, but far too small for any of the crossbows Bruner's fighters carried, or any similar weapon the companions had ever seen. Bruner picked it up in his stubby fingers, brought it close to his eyes, and studied it carefully.
"We got pixies in the tunnels?"
he asked, referring to the diminutive but cruel sprites more common to woodland settings.
"Some type of," Wulfgar began.
"Drow,"
Catterby interrupted. Wulfgar and Bruner turned on her, Wulfgar's clear eyes flashing with anger at being interrupted, but only for the moment it took him to understand the gravity of what Catterby had announced.
"The elf had a bow that would fit this,"
Bruner balked.
"Not Drizzt,"
Catterby corrected grimly.
"Other drow."
Wulfgar and Bruner screwed up their faces in obvious doubt, but Catterby felt certain in her guess. Many times in the past, back in Icewind Dale on the empty slopes of Kelvin's Carn, Drizzt had told her of his homeland, had told her of the remarkable accomplishments of exotic artifacts of the Dark Elf nation. Among these artifacts was the most favored weapon of the Dark Elves, hand-held crossbows, with quarrels usually tipped in poison. Wulfgar and Bruner looked to each other, each hopeful that the other would find some logic to defeat Catterby's grim assertions. Bruner only shrugged, tucked the quarrel away, and started for the outside passage. Wulfgar looked back to the young woman, his face flushed with concern. Neither of them spoke, neither had to, for they both knew well the horror-filled tales of the marauding Dark Elves. The implications seemed grave indeed if Catterby's guess proved correct, if drow elves had come to Mithril Hall. There was something more in Wulfgar's expression that troubled Catterby, though, a possessive protectiveness that the young woman was beginning to believe would get them all in trouble. She pushed past the huge man, dipping low and exiting the chamber, leaving Wulfgar in the dark with his inner turmoil. The caravan made its slow but steady way through the tunnels, the passageways becoming even more natural. Drizzt still wore his armor, but had been stripped of his weapons and had his hands tightly bound behind his back by some magical cord that would not loosen in the least, no matter how he managed to twist his wrists. Dinan, eight legs clicking on the stone, led the troop, with Verna and Jarlaxle a short way behind. Several in the 20 drow party had fallen into formation behind them, including the two keeping watch over Drizzt. They intersected once with the larger flanking band of House Benray soldiers, Jarlaxle issuing quiet orders and the second drow force slipping, melting, away into the shadows. Only then did Drizzt begin to understand the import of the raid on Mithril Hall. By his count, somewhere between 20 and 30 Dark Elves had come up from Menza Boronzen, a formidable raiding party indeed. And had it all been for him? What of Entreri? Drizzt wondered. How did the assassin fit into this? He seemed to mesh so well with the Dark Elves. Of similar build and temperament, the assassin moved along with the drow ranks easily, inconspicuously. Too well, Drizzt thought. Entreri spent some time with the shaven-headed mercenary and Verna, but then dropped back, rank by rank, making his way inevitably toward his most hated enemy.
"Well met," he said coyly,
when he at last fell into step beside Drizzt. A look from the human sent the two closest Dark Elf guards moving respectfully away. Drizzt eyed the assassin closely for a moment, looking for clues, then pointedly turned away.
"What?"
Entreri insisted, grabbing the obstinate drow's shoulder and turning him back. Drizzt stopped abruptly, drawing concerned looks from the drow flanking him, particularly Verna. He started moving again immediately, though, not liking the attention, and gradually the other Dark Elves settled into their comfortable pace around him.
"I do not understand,"
Drizzt remarked offhandedly to Entreri.
"You had the mask, had Regis, and knew where I could be found. Why, then, did you ally with Verna and her gang?" "You presume that the choice was mine to make," Entreri replied. "Your sister found me. I did not seek her out."
"Then you are a prisoner," Drizzt reasoned.
"Hardly,"
Entreri replied without hesitation, chuckling as he spoke.
"You said it correctly the first time. I am an ally."
"Where my kin are concerned, the two are much the same." Again, Entreri chuckled, apparently seeing the bait for what it was. Drizzt winced at the sincerity in the assassin's laughter, because he then realized the strength in the bonds of his enemies, ties he had hoped, in a fleeting moment of any hope, he might stretch and exploit.
"I deal with Jarlaxle, actually," the assassin explained. "Not your volatile sister. Jarlaxle, the pragmatic mercenary, the opportunist, that one I understand. He and I are much alike."
"When you are no longer needed," Drizzt began ominously.
"But I am, and shall continue to be,"
Entreri interrupted.
"Jarlaxle, the opportunist,"
he reiterated loudly, drawing an approving nod from the mercenary, who apparently understood well the common tongue on the surface.
"What gain would Jarlaxle find in killing me? I am a valuable toy to the surface, am I not? The king of a thieves' guild in exotic Kalimport, an ally that might well prove useful in the future. I have dealt with Jarlaxle's kind all my life, guildmasters from a dozen cities along the Sword Coast."
"Drow have been known to kill for the simple pleasure of killing," Drizzt protested, not willing to let go of this one loose strand so easily.
"Agreed," Entreri replied. "But they do not kill when they stand to gain by not killing. Pragmatic. You will not shake this alliance, doomed Drizzt. It is of mutual benefit, you see, to your inevitable loss."
Drizzt paused a long while to digest the information, to find some way to regain that potentially unwinding strand, that loose end that he believed always existed when treacherous individuals came together on any cause. "Not mutual benefit," he said quietly, noting Entreri's curious glance his way.
"Explain,"
Entreri bade him after a long moment of silence. "I know why you came after me," Drizzt reasoned. It was not to have me killed, but to kill me yourself. And not just to kill me, but to defeat me in even combat. That possibility seems less likely now, in these tunnels beside merciless Verna and her desires for simple sacrifice.
So formidable, even when all is lost,
Entreri remarked, his superior tones pulling that elusive strand from Driz's reach once more.
Defeat you in combat, I will. That is the deal, you see. In a chamber not so far from here, your kin and I will part company. But not until you and I have settled our rivalry.
Verna would not let you kill me, Drizzt retorted.
But she would allow me to defeat you,
Entreri answered.
She desires that very thing. Desires that your humiliation be complete. After I have settled our business, then she will give you to Loth, with my blessings. Come now, my friend,
Entreri purred, seeing no response coming from Drizzt, seeing Drizzt's face screwed up in an uncharacteristic pout.
I am not your friend,
Drizzt growled back.
My kindred, then,
Entreri teased, his delight absolute when Drizzt turned an angry glower at him.
Never. We fight,
Entreri explained.
We both fight so very well, and fight to win, though our purposes for battle may vary. I have told you before that you cannot escape me, cannot escape who you are.
Drizzt had no answer for that, not in a corridor surrounded by enemies and with his hands tied behind his back. Entreri had indeed made these claims before, and Drizzt had reconciled them, had come to terms with the decisions of his life and with the path he had chosen of his own. But seeing the obvious pleasure on the evil assassin's face disturbed the honorable drow nonetheless. Whatever else he might do in this seemingly hopeless situation, Drizzt Du'Ardin determined then not to give Entreri his satisfaction. They came to an area of many side passages, winding scallop tunnels, wormholes they seemed, meandering and rolling about in every direction at once. Entreri had said that the room, the parting of ways, was close, and Drizzt knew he was running out of time. He dove headlong to the floor, tucked his feet in tight, and slipped his arms over them, then brought them back in front as he rolled to a standing position. By the time he turned back, the ever-alert Entreri already had his sword and dagger in hand, but Drizzt charged him anyway. Weaponless, the drow had no practical chance, but he guessed that Entreri would not strike him down, guessed that the assassin would not so impulsively destroy the even challenge he desperately craved, the very moment Entreri had worked so very hard to achieve. Predictably, Entreri hesitated, and Drizzt was beyond his half-hearted defense in a moment, leaping into the air and landing a double-footed kick on Entreri's face and chest that sent the man flying away. Drizzt bounced back to his feet and rushed toward the entrance to the nearest side tunnel, blocked by a single drow guard. Again, Drizzt came on fearlessly, hoping that Verna had promised incredible torments to anyone who stole her sacrifice, a hope that seemed confirmed when Drizzt glanced back to Verna to see her hand holding back Jarlaxle's, the mercenary's fingers clutching a throwing dagger. The blocking drow fighter, as agile as a cat, punched out at the charging Drizzt, hilt first. But Drizzt, quicker still, snapped his hand straight up, and the ties binding his wrists hooked the fighter's weapon hand and threw his sword harmlessly high. Drizzt slammed into him, body to body, lifting his knee as they came together and connecting cleanly on his opponent's abdomen. The fighter doubled over, and Drizzt, with no time to spare, pushed past him, throwing him down to trip up the next soldier, and Entreri coming in fast. Around a bend, down a short expanse, then diving into yet another side passage, Drizzt barely managed to keep ahead of the pursuit. So close were his enemies, in fact, that as he turned into the next passage, he heard a quarrel skip along the wall to the side. Even worse, the drow ranger noted other forms slipping in and out of the openings to the sides of the tunnel. There had been no more than 7 dark elves in the corridor with him, but he knew that more than twice that number had accompanied Verna, not to mention the larger force that had been left behind not so long ago. The missing soldiers were all about, Driz knew, flanking and scouting, feeding reports along prescribed routes in silent codes. Around another bend he went, then another, turning back opposite the first. He scrambled up a short wall, then cursed his luck when the branching corridor atop it sloped back down to the previous level. Around another bend he saw a flash of heat glowing fiercely and knew that it was a signal speculum, a metal plate magically heated on one side, which the Dark Elves used for signaling. The heated side glowed like a mirror in sunlight to beings using infravision. Drizzt cut down a side passage, realizing that the webs were tightening about him, knowing that his attempt would not succeed. Then the Drider reared up in front of him. Drizzt's revulsion was absolute, and he backpedaled in spite of the dangers he knew were behind him. To see his brother in such a state, Dinan's bloated torso moving in harmony with the 8 scrambling legs, his face an expressionless death mask, Drizzt quieted his churning emotions, his need to scream out, and looked for a practical way to get past this obstacle. Dinan had turned his twin axes to their blunt sides, waving them wildly, and his 8 legs kicked and bucked, giving Drizzt no obvious opening. Drizzt had no choice. He spun about, intending to flee back the other way. Verna, Jarlaxle, and Entreri turned the corner to greet him. They conversed quietly in a common tongue, and Entreri said something about settling his score then and there, but apparently changed his mind. Verna advanced instead, her whip of 5 living snakeheads waving ominously before her.
"If you defeat me, then you can have back your freedom,"
she teased in the drow tongue as she tossed Twinkle to the floor at Drizzt's feet. He went for the weapon, and Verna struck. But Drizzt had expected as much, and he fell back short of his dropped scimitar, leaving Twinkle just out of reach. The Drider scrambled ahead, an axe clipping Drizzt's shoulder, knocking him backward toward Verna. The ranger had no other choice now and dove headlong for his blade, his fingers barely reaching it. Snake fangs dug into his wrist. Another bite took him on the forearm, and 3 more dove at his face or at his other hand, which was twisted over his grasping hand in a feeble defense. The sting of the bites was vicious, but it was the more insidious poison that defeated Drizzt. He had Twinkle in his grasp, he thought, but he couldn't be certain, since his numbed fingers could no longer feel the weapon's metal. Verna's cruel whip lashed out again, 5 heads biting eagerly into Drizzt's flesh, spreading the waves of numbness throughout his battered form. The merciless priest of a merciless god beat the helpless prisoner a 12 times, her face twisted in absolute evil glee. Drizzt stubbornly held consciousness, eyed her with utter contempt, but that only prodded Verna on, and she would have beaten him to death then and there had not Jarlaxle, and more pointedly Entreri, come beside her and calmed her. For Drizzt, his body racked with agony and all hope of survival long flown, it seemed less than a reprieve.
"Ah!" Brunner wailed. "Me kinfolk!"
Thibbledorf Puent's reaction to the gruesome scene of 7 slaughtered dwarves was even more dramatic. The battle ranger floundered to the side of the tunnel and began slamming his forehead against the stone wall. Undoubtedly, he would have knocked himself cold had not Cobble quietly reminded him that his hammering could be heard a mile away.
"Killed clean and fast," Catterbury commented, trying to keep rational and make some sense of this newest clue.
"Entreri," Brunner growled.
"By all our guesses, if he's truly wearing the face and body of Regis, these dwarves were missing afore he went into the tunnels," Catterbury reasoned. "Seems the assassin might have bringed some helpers along."
The image of the small crossbow bolt played in her mind, and she hoped her suspicions would prove false.
"Dead helpers, when I get me hands around their murdering throats,"
Brunner promised. He fell to his knees then, hunched over a dead dwarf who had been his close friend. Catterbury could not bear the sight. She looked away from her father to Wulfgar, standing quietly and holding the torch. Wulfgar's scowl, aimed at her, caught her by surprise. She studied him for a few moments.
"Well, say your thoughts," she demanded,
growing uncomfortable under his unrelenting glare.
"You should not have come down here,"
the barbarian answered calmly.
"Drizzt is not my friend, then,"
she asked, and she was surprised again at how Wolfgar's face crinkled in barely explosive rage at her mention of the Dark Elf.
"Oh, he is your friend, I do not doubt,"
Wolfgar replied, his tone dripping with venom. "But you are to be my wife. You should not be in this dangerous place." Catterby's eyes opened wide in disbelief, in absolute outrage, showing the reflections of the torchlight as though some inner fire burned within them.
"'Tis not your choice to be making," she cried loudly, so loudly that Cobble and Brunner exchanged concerned looks, and the dwarf king rose from his dead friend and moved toward his daughter.
"You are to be my bride," Wolfgar reminded her, his volume equally disturbing.
Catterby didn't flinch, didn't blink, her determined stare forcing Wolfgar back a step. The resolute young woman almost smiled in spite of her rage, with the knowledge that the barbarian was finally beginning to catch on.
"You should not be here,"
Wolfgar said again, renewing his strength in his declaration.
"Get yourself to Settlestone, then,"
Catterby retorted, poking a finger into Wolfgar's massive chest.
"For if you're thinking I should not be here to help in finding Drizzt, then you cannot call yourself a friend of the Ranger."
"Not as much as you can,"
Wolfgar snarled back, his eyes growing angrily. His face twisted, one fist clenched tightly at his side.
"What are you saying?"
Catterby asked, sincerely confused by all of this, by Wolfgar's irrational words and erratic behavior. Brunner had heard enough. He stepped between the two, pushing Catterby gently back and turning to squarely face the barbarian who had been like a son to him.
"What are you saying, boy?"
the dwarf asked, trying to keep calm, though he wanted nothing more than to punch Wolfgar in the blabbering mouth. Wolfgar didn't look at Brunner at all, just reached over the sturdy but short dwarf to point accusingly at Catterby.
"How many kisses have you and the drow shared?"
he bellowed. Catterby nearly fell over.
"What?"
she shrieked.
"You've lost your senses. I never—"
"You lie!"
Wolfgar roared.
"Damn your words!"
howled Brunner, and out came his great axe. He whipped it across, forcing Wolfgar to leap back and slam hard against the corridor wall, then chopped with it, forcing the barbarian to dive aside. Wolfgar tried to block with the torch, but Brunner slapped it from his hand. Wolfgar tried to get to Aegis Fang, which he had slipped under his backpack when they had found the dead dwarves, but Brunner came at him relentlessly, never actually striking, but forcing him to dodge and dive to scramble across the hard stone.
"Let me kill him for you, me king!"
Point cried, rushing up and misunderstanding Brunner's intentions.
"Get you back!"
Brunner roared at the battle ranger, and all the others were amazed, Point most among them, at the sheer force of Brunner's voice.
"I've been playing along with your stupid actions for 10 days now,"
Brunner said to Wolfgar.
"But I've no more time for you. You speak out whatever's got your hair up here and now, or shut your stupid mouth and keep it shut until we find Drizzt and get us out of these stinking tunnels."
"I have tried to remain calm,"
Wolfgar retorted, and it seemed more like a plea since the barbarian was still on his knees from dodging Brunner's dangerously close swings.
"But I cannot ignore the insult to my honor."
As though realizing his subservient appearance, the proud barbarian leaped to his feet.
"Drizzt met with Catterby before the drow returned to Mithril Hall."
"Who told you that?"
Catterby demanded.
"Regis," Wolfgar shouted back, "and he told me that your meeting was filled with more than words."
"It's a lie,"
Catterby cried. Wolfgar started to respond in kind, but he saw Brunner's wide smile and heard the dwarf's mocking laughter. The head of the dwarf's axe dropped to the floor, Brunner placing both hands on his hips and shaking his head in obvious disbelief.
"You stupid boy,"
the dwarf muttered.
"Why don't you use whatever part of your body's not muscle, and think of what you just said? We're here because we're guessing that Regis ain't Regis."
Wolfgar scrunched his face up in confusion, realizing only then that he had not reconsidered the halfling's volatile accusations in light of recent revelations.
"If you're feeling as stupid as you look, then you're feeling the way you ought to feel,"
Brunner remarked dryly.
The sudden revelations hit Wulfgar as surely as Brunner's axe ever could. How many times had Regis spoken with him alone these last few days? And what, he considered carefully, had been the content of those many meetings? For the first time, perhaps, Wulfgar realized what he had done in his chamber against the Drow, truly realized that he would have killed Drizzt if the Drow had not won the battle.
The halfling, no, Artemis Entreri, tried to use me in his evil plans, Wulfgar reasoned.
He remembered a swirling myriad of sparkling reflections, the facets of a gemstone, inviting him down into its depths.
He used his pendant on me. I cannot be sure, but I think I remember. I believe he used...
Be sure, Brunner said. I knowed you a long time, lad, and never have I knowed you to act so darn stupid, and meself as well, to send the halfling along with Drizzt into this unknown region.
Entreri tried to get me to kill Drizzt, Wulfgar went on, trying to fathom it all.
Tried to get Drizzt to kill yourself, you mean?
Brunner corrected. Catterby snorted, unable to contain her pleasure and her gratitude that Brunner had put the boastful barbarian in his place. Wulfgar scowled at her from over Brunner's shoulder.
You did meet with the Drow, he stated.
That's me own business,
the young woman replied, not giving an inch to Wulfgar's lingering jealousy. The tension began to mount again. Catterby could see that while the revelations about Regis had taken some of the bite from Wulfgar's growl, the protective man still did not wish her there, did not wish his bride to be in a dangerous situation. Stubborn and proud, Catterby remained more insulted than flattered. She didn't get the chance to vent her rage, though, not then, for Cobble came shuffling back to the group, begging them all to be silent. Only then did Brunner and the others notice that Puent was no longer present.
Noise, the cleric explained quietly. Somewhere farther along in the deeper tunnels. Let us pray to Moradin that whatever's down there did not hear the clamor of our own stupidity.
Catterby looked to the fallen dwarves, looked to see Wulfgar do likewise, and knew that the barbarian, like her, was reminding himself that Drizzt was in serious danger. How petty these arguments seemed to her then, and she was ashamed. Brunner sensed her despair, and he came over to her and draped his arm over her shoulder.
"Had to be said," he offered comfortingly. "Had to be brought out and cleared afore the fightin' begins."
Catterby nodded her agreement, and hoped that the fighting, if there was to be any, would begin soon. She hoped, too, with all of her heart, that the next battle would not be fought as vengeance for the death of Drizzt Do'Urden.